they talk to you. I know they talk to nobody. Just listen to my sound.
Liberia is a country with enormous abundant agricultural resources. The country has a rich source of water and cropland. Recent reports suggest that there are substantial sources of oil and gas. Despite such natural wealth, Liberia remains one of the poorest and least developed nations in the world, with per capita GDP income of around $150 a year, with 40% of the adult population being illiterate and life expectancy at birth of under 40 years. The government remains the single largest employer, and most government jobs are available in the capital city only, Monrovia, and with little employment available in the counties. Most Liberians living in the rural regions depend largely on farming and sustenance for livelihood. Recently, there have been extensive land appropriations and speculation on land that have led to uncertainties and conflicts in some parts of rural Liberia. These have focused on land ownership and long-term land tenure. There has been little or no participation of local residents in negotiation of these concession agreements made by the government with international corporations, a factor that has often led to animosity between local communities and concession owners, or between government authorities and local people. There have been labour unrest and potential violent explosions. A number of international corporations, such as Firestone, have had large tracts of land handed to them back in 1920. And to protect their interests, many of these corporations hire ex-combatants to help police their hold on the land. Recently, large-scale land grants totaling more than 1.5 million acres have been made to Simidabe and Golden Verolium for oil palm and rubber plantations. These concessions are said to jeopardize land rights of local populations, threatening local livelihood and well-being of communities, and putting the future viability of one of the world's most significant biodiversity hotspots into doubt. A new report, Uncertain Futures, released by the Liberian NGO Sustainable Development Institute, presents testimonies of people affected by Simidabe's operations in western Liberia and highlights the fears of others where the company plans to expand in the coming years. According to the report, the situation facing communities impacted by the expansion of Simidabe's plantations in Garwula District, western Liberia, is dire. The plantation is on their doorsteps, and their farms and farmlands are being swallowed up by it. There are very few alternative livelihood options, says the report. My name is Firoz Manji, and today I will be speaking with Silas Siakor, campaigner for the Community Rights Programme of the Sustainable Development Institute, one of the authors of the Uncertain Futures report. Silas is one of the members of EJOLT and is one of the contributors to a forthcoming report from EJOLT on leaving the oil in the soil. Welcome to the programme, Silas.
Thank you very much, Firoz, for having me.
Can you give us some background as to what's been going on, what this report is about, and what's been happening in Liberia?
Well, basically, there are a couple of issues to look at, starting with the allocation of the concession. The concessions are large-scale land grants that the government make to foreign companies to get involved in either mining activities or logging, or in this instance, agriculture. In 2009 and 2010, those two really large concessions were allocated, covering more than 1.5 million acres, to just two companies, cutting across a total of 9 of the 15 counties in the country. In both instances, nobody at the local level was consulted. The communities were not informed that these lands were being allocated until the companies showed up and declared that the government had allocated rights to them over the land where communities were already living and farming. And so in 2010, 2011, these companies started clearing areas to plant oil palm. In this particular instance, Simidabe started to clear areas in Garwula District to plant oil palm. And through that, their activities, they did destroy a lot of farms belonging to local people. They did destroy a lot of culturally significant forest areas. The land around those villages were being cleared of crops and planted with oil palm. Areas where food crops were being grown was also being taken over and planted with oil palm. And as a result of that, the communities in that area desperately trying to get the voices heard, filed a complaint against the company. And actually, one of the conclusions or one of the issues that we highlight in this report is very much at the center of the issues we raise. And that is, during the negotiations about the community's complaint in efforts to try to resolve them, the company did concede that it had acted wrongfully by taking over this land without proper consultation. And as a result, it agreed to allow for palm that it had planted in some of the farmlands to be removed and for those areas to be cultivated for the communities to grow food. And for me, that is very, very significant because that is exactly what Liberia needs. We need more food. Nutrition is very, very poor. The government acknowledges that, and the government did promise in its own agriculture policy that it will invest significantly in improving infrastructure and providing inputs for farmers to grow more food, which is a bit of a contradiction when you see large-scale, fertile agricultural land being allocated to oil palm in areas where communities were already cultivating food crops. Then, of course, you begin to ask some questions about what exactly is the government's intention in all of this.
Let me get this clear. This land was assigned to this international corporation by the government. Is that right?
Exactly. The government allocated, in this instance, to Sime Darby, 350,000 hectares, which is more than 500,000 acres of land cutting across four counties. So this was a government grant to an international corporation without any involvement of those residing, of those who have got private properties, private land in those areas. Absolutely no consultation with the locals on the ground.
Who exactly assigned Darby? Are they a Malaysian company?
Sime Darby is a Malaysian company, and it should interest you to note that the company actually, back in 2007, 2008, had acquired an old concession, the Godrick Rubber Concession in Liberia in that same area, which covered an initial concession area of 300,000 acres, which is fairly small in relation to the current allocation. So they acquired Guthrie back in 2007, 2008, and then instead of the government allowing them to just focus on that area that had been acquired through their own merger with Guthrie, the government instead decided to allocate additional areas, which then took the concession from 300,000 acres to more than 500,000 acres.
Who owns this property? I mean, does it not belong to the communities who've been living there and farming it for many years?
There are a couple of levels at which you could consider that. On one level, communities who live and use the land currently have rights under our own customary land tenure arrangements. The government recognizes their right to live on the land and to use it insofar they live in those areas. Those rights are clearly protected both in Liberian law and also in international law. The second level at which you can consider this is that there are individual families within those areas that have got private property rights over certain parcels of land. And in these instances, this is a situation where individual families have bought the land back from the state, and they've got legitimate titles to those lands. The third dimension is that, for example, in one of the regions that will be affected extensively by this plantation, if it does go ahead, entire communities comprising of thousands of people actually got together back in the 1920s and 1930s and 1940s and bought their own land back from the state and registered those land way back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. And they've got long-standing rights to those lands that has been recognized by the state, different governments over the years. And now this land is being targeted by the company. The government included that in the concession area. So again, you've got a situation of private property that the government is allocating to a foreign business interest without any kind of due process or consideration of the rights of the private landowners in those areas.
So those landowners, whether they're private or by customary law, haven't been paid for the land which has been taken away from them?
They have not been paid. There is no plan to pay them, to compensate them for the loss of the land. And we've looked at the contract in that respect, and also the implementation of the contract is testimony to that fact. For example, in Gawula, where the company had already cleared farmlands, they paid some small compensation for the crops that were destroyed, but did not pay any compensation for the land that had been taken over by the people who had cultivated crops in those areas in the first instance. Secondly, no replacement land were allocated to the people who had lost land as a result of the company's plantation development activities. So in this instance, you've got a situation where entire villages are being surrounded by the oil palm. They are not giving replacement land where they can cultivate food crops, and there's no compensation being paid to them for the land that they are losing to the company's activities.
So help me understand, all this land grabbing and making people presumably landless, how does that contribute to development?
I think that is where one needs to think beyond just this one company's actions. And if I may also add, this is not just in Gawula. This is the same situation that is already unraveling in the southeastern part of the country in Sino County, where Golden Beryllium, another international Singapore-listed company, operates. But the situation is that people on the ground now are saying to the government in a very pointed and in very clear terms that if this is what you refer to as development, then we may as well say no to this type of development. Because any development that disempowers people, losing their lands, losing their livelihoods, losing access to the only resources that they have and they are being able to use to lift themselves out of poverty, people are waking up and saying, sorry, but this is not the kind of development that we envisage. And I think if you put it into broader context, I think the model of development that has been pursued by the country is really, really not going to lead us in the direction that many Liberians would like us to go. And especially in terms of plantations, if you look at Liberia's history, back in 1924, 1925, when the first large agriculture concession was allocated to Firestone, then owned by Bridgestone in eastern Liberia, the president did go to the legislature and made exactly the same comment that this is development. We have to rely on foreign capital to develop the country and do not get bothered by NGOs and other detractors claiming that we are selling the country to these large-scale agriculture companies. But if you look at 88 years later, the reality of the people where Firestone operates is a story that's really, really appalling. Child labor is very rampant on the plantation, environmental degradation, the environmental footprint is really, really large. Labor conditions are extremely poor. Working and living conditions on the plantations are completely appalling. And the development that was promised more than 88 years ago has not materialized. And so this is the type of model that we think will continue to take Liberia in the opposite direction, away from any kind of development that resembles sustainable or equitable development.
We hear a great deal in the newspapers and television about how President Sirleaf Johnson has brought democracy to Liberia. How do we reconcile this with her government giving away 500,000 acres of land to this company?
I think there is a kind of state of denial on the part of the international community. I think there is growing evidence of a range of problems associated with the leadership of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. I think a lot of the issues that are being raised are being deliberately ignored by the international community because they will prefer to showcase Liberia as a success story. And that is not going to do very well for Liberia because we see a situation where this government is sowing the seed for future conflicts. We are already beginning to see that. For example, of the more than 1.5 million acres of land that has been allocated to those companies, they have been able to cultivate less than 30,000 acres. But already the conflict that we are seeing as a result of clearance on just the 30,000 acres is really troubling. And therefore, one can expect that as these companies expand further beyond into, say, clearing 50,000 acres going towards 60,000 acres, the amount of resentment and resistance from local communities is going to grow. And that is a very clear recipe for chaos and violence. And we've already seen that in Greenville, in Sino County, where Golden Verulam operates, two persons are in jail as we speak. And these are villagers that took upon themselves to clear the areas that have been planted with oil palm on their farmlands in order to cultivate them for food crops. They are languishing in prison as we speak at the moment. Recently, I was up in that region and talking to one of the local government officials. He was very pointed and very threatening. And he said, basically, anybody, any NGO, any local community activist that tries to disrupt the company's activities, he will deal with them in the most drastic of form. And so when you begin to see local officials and government officials taking such hard and very extreme, drastic push towards local communities and local actors and even national-level NGO workers, then that is a really serious reason for concern. Unfortunately, the international community is not paying enough attention to these issues, and I think it is a grave mistake. And there is a real likelihood that unless something is done about this situation, we are going to end up with, in the next 2-3 years, with some very threatening situation of large-scale violence across the country.